Works on the farm, things like that. We didn't have any modern things in those days. No electric lights. Had wells for our water. We had a pump by hand. That's been a long while ago. I was born in 1906. So that goes back. We had dirt roads. The first roads, that country road through Principio, from Perryville to what they call the Gum Tree, was, they started it in completed in 1914. Before that, everything was dirt road, and that was the first paved road we had. And electricity didn't come through Principio until they built Conwinga Dam. And they brought electricity through there. That was the first electricity we had. That was in, 28, I guess. And all we did was play ball and swim, and it was enjoyable for kids. It was a lot of fun. I don't know what else I can tell you. That's about it.
Well, how about your parents? What type of work did they do?
My father worked in the iron works. He was working at forge. They made charcoal iron there, and he was what they call a shingler. They made these blooms, such as they call iron blooms, and they brought them to a big steam hammer, and he rolled it around while they hammered it out and made, rectangular pieces that weighed about 350 pounds, and they shipped them to Little Western Pennsylvania and made bullet tubes out of them. That was his work. Of course, they closed up sometime after the First World War. And he died at a fairly young man. He was only 47 years old. He got the flu and died. Of course, I left Principio in 1924. That's when my mother went to live with one of my sisters. I don't know what else I can tell you about that. I think that's about it.
You said you grew up on a farm.
Well, I didn't grow up on a farm. I used to work on a farm over there in the summertime. I didn't grow up on the farm, no. We were just living in a house owned by the company. And my father worked on the forge. The Whitakers owned all the land around there. I don't know whether they owned 12 or 13, 14,000 acres of land all out through that woods and all that farmland there. They were in fact all the land there. The Whitaker Iron Company owned the place, but then the Tyler Tube and Cock Company operated the forge. They were from Little Western Pennsylvania. Since then, I think the York Concrete Block Company bought all the land there. Now, the people that make concrete block in Aberdeen, they bought all that land.
What type of work did you do on the farm?
Well, I just did. When I worked there, I was a kid. I thinned corn and help get in hay and chop wheat. I just worked on the farm during from off from school, 3 months off from school, just worked on the farm. Well, in fact, the way I remember, I got $1.50 a day. That was pretty good money back then. Over half a dozen of us boys used to work on the farm at some time. I'll do everything there.
How about your schooling? What was that like?
Well, I just went to school there at Principio. That I never went beyond elementary school. So I went to school there. It was a two-room schoolhouse. And they had, like, the first four grades were in one room, and they bounced the other grades. They only had seven grades in elementary school, and the three grades were in another room. And we had, of course, I say we carried water out of a bucket, and we had two big pot-belly stoves, one in each room. That's the way they heated it. The old building's still standing over there. If you want to know any more, you got to ask me questions.
Okay. When you did move to Hartford, what was the reason and some of the differences you saw?
Well, the reason, I went to work quite young for Frank Sentman, learned the carpenter trade. And he was a contractor, small building contractor, and I worked for him, I don't know, maybe 6 or 8 years I worked for him. And then work got scarce, and they started to build the Veterans Hospital in Churchville, Pennsylvania, and Walter Kressel and I went up there and got a job as carpenters. And I worked there for only a short while, and the man I knew was working in Baltimore, and he got me to come down to Baltimore and go to work as a carpenter. And I went down there in 29. I worked for David's Construction Company, I remember that. And I worked down in Baltimore, and then, of course, the appraisal come along, and work got scarce, and a friend I knew got me a job. I even worked for him before. This Frank Sentman's brother, and he was working Harry Grace, and he could get me a job up there. So I came back to Harry Grace, went to work with Tom Borman. Didn't have a great place, was a general contractor in Haverty Grace. That's how I got around back to Haverty Grace. That was in, I don't know, 32 or 33, something like that. And I've been there ever since. And when he retired, his son and I went in the contracting business together. He sort of set it up so we went in the business together. And then later we parted, and I became a sole contractor. I was in the 40s, and I retired 10 years ago.
Or in those days, what type of carpentry work did you do?
Well, I did everything. If I went to Baltimore, I went to work on a schoolhouse in Highlandtown, three-story schoolhouse, and then I worked. That's what this man mostly did. I worked on a schoolhouse and left there, and we went over to Maryland Training School and built a couple of buildings there, and then I went to Training School. We built a building on Charles Street. And then we came back here with Tom Borman. He did general construction. Most of it was housing, but we did other things. He remodeled the old downtown home school. I worked on that. We built that, we built that Richardson's drugstore up in Bel Air, which is a brain. It's not a drugstore anymore, it's an office building, whether you know what I'm talking about or not. I think the doctor or something other thing. They've remodeled that and made it into offices. But Borman mostly built houses. But I went in business, and I did houses, and I did all, I did work at. I did the racetrack work for 3 or 4 years before they closed up, building barns and all kinds of things. And I built that big house for Dr. Foley's here in town. I built a lot of houses. And I did work at Huber's, Dr. Huber's. I did their work for, all their work for, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 years. I worked out there doing all their work. I did a lot of work out there. But we just did general contracting work. I did some work at Prairie Point and over down to Proving Ground. And I moved, I had my home. I lived over on 620 Line Street, and I sold it and moved over here December of 84, so there was just too much for me to handle that place over there. I'm very happy that I moved here. My wife died in 78. That's right, 78. So then I've been alone since then.
When you went into the construction business, you and your partner, what were some of the duties and responsibilities you had owning your own company?
Well, he did most of the office work. He didn't run into jobs too much, and I looked after the construction part of it after the workmen. He did some of that, but not too much. He did most of the office work. And I would mostly did the after the word, which was probably at all the men. So after a while, it didn't seem to be working out quite right. So we dissolved the partnership, and we're still very good friends, and I'm happy with no animosity between the two of us. He runs has this Chesapeake Rental in here. I think he does pretty well out there. He's not as old as I am, but he's not young. I'll be 80 years old in September, so it's time to be a quick work anyhow.
What were some of the problems that you saw in the construction business when you were growing up? Like, the materials or some of the techniques they were doing?
Well, of course, materials and techniques both changed a lot, you know. But they didn't change as much while I was in the business as they have since. Because everything now is altogether different now. It's modular homes and prefabs. Practically everything you buy today for buildings is prefabbed in some respect. Well, before we did everything. When I first started in, we ripped our own lumber. We didn't have power saws. We got them a few years of gasoline driven saws, but you wanted to, if you had a 2-way, you wanted a couple 2x4s, you ripped them, made a couple 2x4s out of 2-8. When you, with those days, you were a good carpenter, could do anything. Today they're more like specialized. Everybody's specialized. Like people come in and certain people set the doors and windows, and people do drywall work, and then have drywall finishers. But most of the work is drywall anymore. Back in my days, when we started out, we were plastered on wood lath, and then we went to plastered on rock lath. Of course, everything was plastered in of any back in those days. And they got this, what's called sheetrock. Now they call it drywall. And these drywall, they do a nice job. They make a nice job out of it, too. But everything's specialized today. But in those days, they were not. You get pre-fit doors. The windows are already in the window frame. Before we got them, we used to get the window frame. Then we'd get the windows, and we'd have to fit the windows in, hang them on weights and cords. You'd have cast iron weights you used to hang the windows on. But that's going by the wayside years ago. But that was when, back in former years, when you spoke of a carpenter, he was a carpenter. He could do anything when it comes to working with wood.
Also, when you're building houses, what were some of the other methods you used? You were just telling me about the way you used to put the windows in. Oh, can you tell us more about the techniques of building, say, a home or a business office?
Well, when we first started, we used to, if you dig a basement, we used horses and scoops. You'd have like most of some of these farmers around, would come to specialize in that. You would, you wanted to sell her, you know somebody that did that, and they'd come in with horses and scoops and scoop the, they'd plow and scoop the dirt out, plow and scoop the dirt out. And it may take a week to dig a cellar for a house. Now they dig them in half a day. And most of them those days were concrete foundations. The concrete blocks were just in its infancy. It was just that they started putting concrete block foundations there for that. Some foundations were built of stone, or most of them were built of poured concrete. And the floors, if you had you had finished floors, they used to hand scrape them. I don't know whether I can probably explain that to you or not. A man can put his hands and knees and he scraped the floors to bring them smooth. That was a trade of its own. There was a man named Bailey Moser in Highway Grace. He was the floor scraper. That was quite a job. And he would scrape them and bring them for a finish. He would put the, like, varnish or shellac on them in those days. They got, that's what they finished them with. Of course, now it's sand floors. But you don't get too many of them now. Most of them are carpet today. But there's some real nice hand scraped floors around. And, of course, well, back when I first started, like for soil pipe for bathrooms and such, they use lead. And then we got away from that and started using cast iron. We used all lead. Of course, that was for drain pipe, the lead. They used cast iron drain pipe. And, well, they used lead, then it went from lead to cast iron. And we used for galvanized pipe for water pipe now, because all of it's copper now. Now let's see where they're fussing about the soldering lead solder they use. Now they might be getting lead poisoned into drinking water. I guess you've read a little of that too lately. I don't think it's too, that's not great, but they're saying that anyhow. We use a lot of wood shingles in for roof work. We got into the asphalt. Some of these shingles. And we did use a lot of slate. A good house they use slate on all the time. And of course we used to get a lot of good slate up here right at Peach Bottom. You know, up at the Delta. You've heard of those quarries up there, right? Have you or not? Have you? Where are you from?
From Churchville. I'm familiar with that area.
Are you? Well, I remember we used to get slate from Peach Bottom. Slate was the best slate in the country. The best roof slate. You couldn't buy any better slate. And then, of course, we got other slate from up in Pennsylvania. But it wasn't as good a slate as the Peach Bottom. It was the best. But they went out of business on us to cost too much for you. But that best roof we could find was the slate roof. And they were slaters, I mean, that's all they did, just worked at it, just did slate work. And there was a few of them, they stayed busy doing slate work. But it's all changed. That was cheap then, too. Of course, you didn't make much money. I don't know what else I can say.
Well, how about the interior of the house? You're saying about the different walls, like the drywall and the plastic wall. What type of interior wall were you using in the backing and things?
In the 30s, they started using this rock lath for for a base for plaster, then they put it was the 3/8 inch thick, and they'd come in and put a 1/2 inch of plaster. I mean, the plaster would put a 1/2 inch of plaster on. So that what they were plastering, I don't know, in ages ago, but that made a nice job. And you get these good plaster, they can make it. They make white wall, then they had a sand finish wall. That was mixed sand and white wall together, and it was rough. I mean, I don't know whether you ever you saw some of them, I presume, around. And they, of course, the sand finish, only thing you do is paint them, but the white wall, like these walls, this is drywall work, but it comes out the same finish, and you can paper this. Anything you can paper, you know, you plaster wall. A lot of people did paper back in those days, a lot of paper. Because I like paper anyhow, I think it makes a beautiful thing. Beautiful thing. But, there's always plastered walls when I, for years in, until they come along with this drywall, and it does a nice job, this drywall. They use 1/2 to 5/8 inch drywall on these walls. They used to do electric work when they first started out. You put one light in the middle of the ceiling and a couple outlets, and that's about all. They didn't do all the stuff they do today. We didn't have the appliances to use in those days. I don't think I ever worked on a house that didn't put electric in. I don't remember ever doing that. I may have. Of course, we didn't have air conditioning. We did have hot water heater, steam heat when we first started. The radiator, that's the first central heating we had. Of course, they were all coal fired boilers. And in the later years, they came along with what's called an old pipeless furnace. I don't know if you ever saw one of those or not.
I remember being
in the middle of the room, or just a big square thing, about 4-foot square in the middle of the room.
Or he usually has this pushed to the side, but it's all the iron and grating.
No, but they had one furnace they used to put in the basement, and they put it in one room in the house, like between the living room and the dining room. And that's all, and then they'd put a register in the over, so it was up in the bedroom, was up to the second floor. And then the air circulated back down around the side of the furnace, and that's where it circulated, and of course it made a lot of dust. They call that a pipeless furnace. Armstrong made those over in Perryville. They had a stove foundry over there. Of course, other places made them too. That's where we used to buy them when we first started coming out. And it was an old pipeless furnace. It'd be plenty hot around it, but then they put this duct there in there, which too, like I think, went around different places. Not like today, but they did duck it, but that wasn't very good heat. But today, where you got this air, central air heating, that makes a nice for the course like I have here. That's what that is up there. That's a big metal duct up there, you see, where it comes out air conditioner. Mm-hmm. Are you originally from Churchill, you say?
Yes. I remember some of the things you were talking about. I used to see in our grandfather's house there. There's old iron heaters in each room.
In the radiator, you mean?
Oh, the old radiators. I guess that's what they used to call them. And then they just heat up. The old iron heat would just come through that way.
Well, that would make heat. They had those steam and had hot water also. And when it first came out, there was all gravity. There was no circulator. So you had to add all the pipes had to drain back to the boiler, or else you'd get airbound and you wouldn't get any heat. You'd get an air pocket in the pipe, and then the thing wouldn't heat. So when you put the pipes in, they all had to have gravity back to the boiler, so the heat went through, and then it would, with hot water, it would circulate. It would steam. The steam would go into the radiator, then it would condense into water, and it would run back into the boiler by gravity. They made heat. We built some nice houses. We built that big stone house, Dr. Richards, up in Port, this side of 45. That was the one on the middle. We did look at it. Well, we used a lot of hot air and hot water, and not too much steam. Steam was the first. It sort of was going out. Hot water was coming on when I first started. It made nice heat. I had heat in my home over on Line Street, hot water. But this is better. I like this on the kind of air conditioning.
Well, you talked about the electrical work. What differences were then compared to now, like the wiring and then all the materials they used? And then,
well, of course, when the electric, but all you started out for was to have a light. Because in my younger days, you had kerosene lamps, and every day they washed the lamp clothes and had them all cleaned up, ready for the set one. They set one in the living room, one in the dining room, and one in the kitchen. They didn't have a small lamp to carry to your bedroom at night, but it was a little lamp. And when you come back out of electric, you just about all you did was hang a light in the dining room, one in the living room. I played golf.
Ooh.
That was one of my golfing friends lining up tomorrow. I played golf about 3 times a week.
Must be enjoyable.
Did you play golf?
I play miniature golf.
Oh, well, you got to get it. You're young enough to play all kinds of golf. No, I play golf. I played golf for a long while. Because I don't play as well as I used to. When you get to be 80 years old, you don't play like you did when you were 30. But I still enjoy it very much. So that's who he was. That's who we're supposed to play. We already talked to him yesterday. We're supposed to play tomorrow. So there's 4 of us going to play. I don't know whether any more or not. So that's what that was all about.
Must be enjoyable.
Yeah, it is. If you like to play golf, it's enjoyable. If you like sports. That's that. I don't know where we were.
Are you talking about the types of electricity and the lighting they had then?
Well, as I said, all you had was one. They started getting appliances such as washers, electric washers, and toasters, and all kinds of stuff. And then your electricity become, well, you had to have more of it, voltage, or more, not more voltage. I can't even say what I'm trying to say. Anyhow, some more sophisticated than. Now we have all these modern appliances, and you got to have all kinds of power in your house. But back then, in the old days, all you had was one light in the center of a room. That's all you had. And it was worth it. And it was a really nice light. Of course, in the cities, they had gas lights, but I never had gas lights. Even when I went to the city, they had electric lights.
You did some work for the Citizens National Bank. Would you like to tell us about what type of work you did there?
What do you mean by that?
or when you were just working there, like some of your duties, some problems, some successes, some changes?
No, well, I built a decent of the built a decent of the Citizens Bank, and then did other work there. But then I've been a director of the Citizens Bank for 1956 or something like that. Is that what you mean, as a director?
Yes, as a director.
Well, we never had any real problems there. Of course, we went from a... We were the Citizens National Bank in Havre Grace, and we had a couple of merger attempts. First National tried to... We were about ready to merge with them, First National of Maryland, and then the Justice Department wouldn't allow us to do it because they said the First National had too many outlets in Harvard County, so they wouldn't let us merge. And then later we merged with the Elton Banking and Trust Company. And that was good for both institutions. And then here, I don't know how many years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, the Mercantile Bank Shares Corporation. We didn't merge with them, but I guess we've become, I'm not sure this is the right wording. They own the bank now, and it's a Mercantile Bank Shares Corporation, and they gave us 7 shares for 1. For every share we own. So we hold stock in the Mercantile Bank Shares Corporation. But the bank is operated by local people like it was before this happened. So we are, and I'm still on the advisory board up here at the bank. And it's been, it was a good things that happened to both banks, but our bank, I mean, for the shareholders, it was a good deal. But we never had any real problems. They had some problems before I was a member of it. They had probably had one man that, I don't think we ought to talk about that. I don't want to talk about that. He made some problems for himself and everybody else. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that'd be good to put in the paper. Heard of him. It's been too, everybody knew it at the time. But the bank for long term has been quite successful, and it's doing well now. It's growing. They keep growing. Of course, Elton is the number one. That's the head of the bank. And then we got Cecilton, Chestertown, Northeast, Rising Sun, Avery Grace. I may have missed one or two, I don't know. But we had the second largest growth, Avery Grace Bank, the second largest growth in that chain last year, which is pretty good. Percentage wise, now I'm talking about. And we meet, our board meets twice a month. That's how often we meet. And we go out and appraise property. People want to make loans, you know, like real mortgage loans. And we praise property for them. Very enjoyable thing to do. I'm also I'm chairman of the board of the Citizens Nursing Home. I don't know if you know that or not.
I'm familiar with that. What type of work do you do there?
I'm just chairman of the board now. The board... We work without compensation. Make sure that's... Most people think that we make money. We are compensated greatly, but we are not compensated for that. We do that as a charitable thing, and I enjoy it very much. I've been on it from its inception on the board. I don't believe anybody else on has been on there anymore this from it. Session. And I think it's 23 years I've been on that board. I know there's a lot of write-up in the paper about us during the winter. The union and all that stuff, that's all died down now. The union didn't get in, and we're happy over it. It's one of the nicest things for me that I have right now, to be on that board. You know, I feel as you get older, you need things to do. So I think you just sit up and sit down, or just sit and wither away. And I don't intend to do that.
No, I don't either.
Well, I don't. I mean, I'm on that, and I'm on the advisory board of the Augusta Savings and Loan, and I'm in the bank. And so I have three things that I'm active with, and I play golf, and I'm just as busy as I was when I worked, practically. It was a different kind of busy, but I couldn't work physically. I'm not able to work.
Or during your years in Harford County, can you just tell us about some of the events, such as the racetrack, or different things like that?
I don't think I'm too well versed in the racetrack, although I did work out there for several years. I did the work out there for several years. Like the last year that I built barns, I built 144 stables. They were in barns, like 28 in one stable, 44 in another stable. I built 144 stables with never horse in it. They sold it. That was the last year that I built stables. That's that year, that summer. After the race meet in the spring, after April, I built those stables. And that winter, they wasn't ready to go in that fall, and that winter they sold the racetrack, and then never with a horse went in, which was quite a thing. I thought that was something. And that was a surprise. And the National Guard bought them. I wasn't a horse petter, so I didn't, the horse racing itself, I like to watch them and all that, but I know one thing, you can't make money betting horses, so I wasn't a horse better. But it was quite back in the olden days when the transportation wasn't what it is today. So many of the racetrack people stayed in Havre's race. Practically everybody had rented rooms to the people who worked on the racetrack. The owners of horses and jockeys and they really rented rooms, and there was two or three dining rooms in Havre Grace where they just opened during the race meet. Mrs. Boots Davis up on White Street, she had a big dining room she used to rent. It was still a board, these racetrack people. It was quite a lot of excitement during the races and days. And every night these armored trucks used to bring the money into the, that was Citizens Bank, used to be their banker. They'd bring the money in the evening, hear the sirens running of the state police, and then in the morning, about 11 o'clock, the armored truck would take the money out of the racetrack, and they'd have police escort. And just one of those things, time to make things easy. I think with that they opened. See, there was no racing in Delaware or New Jersey in those that time, and then they would race here, then they'd go to New York because it didn't race in the winter, and then they raced there in the spring and the fall. And when the Delaware opened, Jersey opened, then I think that was mostly the biggest reason that this racetrack closed up, I believe, because it was people were going other places. You know, we used to get special trains used to come down from Philadelphia on Saturdays from New York. People used to come on special trains to the racetrack. Used to go on the sidings in there and maybe 7 or 8 trains to the racetrack. And then when they opened in Delaware and New Jersey, then people, especially those people up there, went to races up in Delaware and Jersey. But there's people know more, a lot more about the racetrack than I do.
Well, how about the politics of the day, like such as some of the mayors, like maybe McAuley and
McAuley?
You know, or McAuley, or some of the things that they did and how they influenced the construction business with all the zonings and different things like that.
Well, I mean, I never like to get too much involved in politics. I'm more or less approved of our mayors. I think they all made an effort to do what was right. I really do believe they did. Of course, some were better prepared to do the right thing than others, but I think I can't find any real fault with any of them. I really can't.
Or did you ever have any problems with zoning districts?
Well, you know, when I was building, the zoning wasn't. You could do practically anything. And first, you didn't even get permits to build. For years and years, you couldn't build. You built whatever you wanted to build. Now, of course, now the zoning bit, they are really hot on it. But back in those days, and then even later when I, before I stopped, you did have to get a permit, but there was no problem to get a permit. They didn't have a zoning board back in those days. You just went to the mayor and council, and or you'd go up to the clerk and put an application and then talk to the council, go up there and meet at the council meeting. You had no problem whatsoever. It was very easy. And then we got this zoning board and all that, and which I believe is good, because people did a lot of things then they shouldn't have done. So, of course, sometimes they go a little far-fetched on some of the things they do. But back in those days, you had no problem with the zoning. So there probably was no zoning. There's been a lot of changes since in 10 years, there's been an awful lot of changes. What to do today, what to do then. And prices have changed. I don't know the price of anything anymore.
Or would you just like to tell us about some of those changes you've seen? Which is maybe in the waterfront, or the real estate changes, the industry?
It's a waterfront, you've been around much, it's changed quite a bit lately. I remember when I had a tugboat down there, used to sit down there where, what's the name of the restaurant? You see a tugboat sit down there, used to pull boats back and forth through, they used to pull boats through the drawbridge. That was it, it was for, they used to have sailboats. I remember they had sailboats here. Sail, and they had to open the drawbridge for sailboats. And with the building, there's a restaurant, of course, they built the restaurant and down there on the wharf. And now, of course, Alan Fair is building all those things down here on the log pond. That's going to be a big change. Of course, they cleaned up the old canal up there. Cleaned up a lot there. Well, I remember the movie theater up there. They used to people standing on the sidewalk to get in to go to the movies. Now, I don't know, they have the movie in that place open up there. I don't think they have too many patrons. Things have changed, and I also remember this, on the front street down here in Haverty Grace, on Friday and Saturday nights, that they would be so crowded you could hardly walk up and down the street every Friday and Saturday night. And the stores did a flourishing business. They had nice stores and they really did a business. Of course, there were a lot of people on the streets every night. But Friday and Saturday night, they were so crowded, it wasn't easy up and down the street. That's all changed. Like all, you know, big cities and all that have changed. So people don't go to the cities to shop anymore. They go to the shopping centers. Well, that's where you go, isn't it?
Or we go to different places.
Well, most people go to shopping centers because there's parking, I think. And there's more. You got the bigger stores there, and you can get, there's more variety. You can get more of what you want. In these little town stores. You don't have too much of a shopping district anymore. Although some of them are still in business.
You're talking about hard times during the 30s. Can you just tell us about what that was like living in this area? How the Depression affected Haverty Grace?
Well, it had affected every place. It was hard to get, you were lucky to have a job. I didn't work all the time, but I had work most of the time. I could get a job, but wages were, the wages were very, very poor. They had WPA, I think they used to get $6 a week working for the, that was government fund money. I never worked at that on WPA. I never worked at that, but people did and got to get $6. I think it was $6 a week. But I was making, before the Depression, when it first started off, I remember $40.50 a week, which is pretty good money. I was living in Baltimore, and I was paying $6 a week board and 75 cents from a laundry. So, and I had a good boarding pay. I was single. So I was paying $6.75 a week for board and room and laundry, and I was making $40.50. And I had plenty of money. You can see that. Percentage-wise, that's more than you're doing now, I bet. Because today, what would you pay for board today? $60 a week? I don't know. And I come up, then it got down where they was only paying carpenters 40 cents an hour. And you can always have a job. So, that went on for, I'd say that went on for somewhere around 6 years. Then things started to loosen up a little bit. And there's probably more work, people doing more work, and then wages started going up. And I remember it got up to 75 cents an hour, then you were doing real well when you got back up to 75 cents an hour. But farmers were getting a little low at 40 cents a week, and you're lucky to get a job. And you can, of course, buying stuff. There's a couple of girls on motorcycles. But it was tough. It was tough. I mean, for everybody. It was tough. But I had an automobile. I bought one in 1929, a new car, and I had an automobile, and I could get around, get to work, but it was tough. I was lucky to have a job.
Are there any other stories or experiences or changes that you've seen before I have to leave?
I don't know.
Could this maybe how construction's changed, or the architects that you were building, say, in the 20s and 30s, and with the architecture?
Well, of course, there is change, some change in architecture. We have more modern architecture than we had back in those days. And some of it wasn't too great. I mean, we had architecture, and you did our work for architecture, and mostly nice work. But a lot of these people, you're just building houses, you build a house from a, they send away and get one of these books and have a house in it, and then, well, a house built like this, in this book. You build from the book, where they'd have plans of these books and everything, but it wasn't as detailed. The architect around here, I worked on this house of Mrs. Carroll over here on the avenue. That was Milton Carroll, that architect was Howell. He was a colonial architect. He did a lot of work for the state. But he was a colonial architect, and that's you'll see that has a colonial feel. And I remember him, that was a very nice house. He did the place on the highway up here, and especially out here, the eating place, the soldiers called Howdy. And I worked on two or three jobs in Baltimore. He did. He was a really good architect. And Alex Shaw was the first architect that I knew in Harford County that actually was in Harford County and worked out of Fort Bel Air. And he did some pretty nice work. I built a house for Lloyd Richardson down there on Emerson Road that Shaw was architect on. And let's see, another house built in Bel Air. Melvin Johnson, he was architect on. He was a all on a loan office. So nice house. That's the architect on. I did pull a three job for him. Three or four jobs. But architecture change is changing. Of course, it's more modern today than what it was other days. Which is for the good of it. But I don't know what else I can tell you much.